Marvel Comics Star Wars series, issue 12, which means that had this come out on a monthly basis, which it supposedly did, this would be the one-year anniversary of the comic series, an issue entitled Doom World. I'm Joshua Lappin-Bertoni, and we are taking a look at the Marvel Comics Star Wars series issue by issue. And this issue's cover was actually done by Terry Austin and Carmine Infantino, you know, penciler and inker, the same people doing the interiors, which was not the case with a lot of the early covers, but go figure. Cover is Luke, which I had to double check just to make sure that it was Carmine Infantino, because he's drawn a little differently. He's drawn a little bit like He-Man, which is what Howard Chaykin did in the Owen and Beru scene in issue 1. He's on a boat, and R2 and 3PO are behind him. R2 little illustrated oddly. 3PO illustrated a lot better than he usually is. The people pointing their blasters at Luke, and he has his red lightsaber out. Yes, red lightsaber, a little shorter than it usually is, too. We want those robots, boys, and that lightsaber can't stop us. I imagine these as hillbillies for some reason, or mountain men. Luke and the droids trapped on a doom world. And that is the cover. Why don't we get to the issue inside, and the brief recap from the story arc so far that they give on the title page is, the Rebel Alliance sent Luke Skywalker to find a new location for their main base after the Battle of the Death Star, but here, on this unnamed planet of the Star Sun Drexel, Luke has found instead what may be for him and the two droids, R2-D2 and C-3PO, a Doom World! Well, let's pick back up where we left off with them. Luke and 3PO and R2 are in the sinking escape pod. The sea serpents and their riders seem to be attacking or salvaging their sinking ship that they had come in. But thankfully, they don't notice the escape pod while Luke watches with his space binoculars. Which, it's actually the same binoculars, or similar to what he was using on Tatooine when he was looking for R2. Luke says, wait, 3PO, behind us on the horizon! Hydrocraft! Don't know what they're called here, but they're skimming over the water, just like I used to whip around Tatooine in my old land spinner. Begging your pardon, sir, but isn't that a rather awkward analogy? Yes, 3PO, it is. It's a really bad analogy. I get it, Marvel. You're trying really hard to make us remember the movie and how awesome it was. Well, these new arrivals, which are on the water land speeders, attack the Dragon Riders. They're able to scare the Dragon Riders off, but not before losing some of their skimmers. The loss disappoints them, but then they notice Luke and the droids over in the escape pod. So, one of the remaining skimmers magnetizes the escape pod to drag Luke and the droids and the pod itself over to them. Infantino, just like Howard Chaykin did, as I mentioned earlier, would make Luke look like He-Man. But the guy in one of the panels, who was one of the skimmer riders who fell off and into the water, he looks like he and Luke may be twins. He's drawn almost exactly the same way. Maybe he was the other that Yoda spoke of, and Leia was just an 11th hour change. Who are we kidding? We all know that Leia was an 11th hour change. Moments later, the golden-hued translator droid's feelings is put to the test as the pod is hauled onto the Hydrocraft. Blazes, that iron stew pot still has a few pieces of meat on it.
Yeah, but one of them's wearing a metal suit.
That's no suit, fool. Have you forgotten all your off-world whirl? That star hopping's traveling with a genuine robot, and that smaller piece of nuts and bolts besides him is one, too. But neither of them holds enough components to make the governor forgive us for the lost skimmers. Okay, hold a. Are these guys really so stupid that they don't recognize robots? This is the Star Wars universe. There are robots everywhere. Come on. I know that this is Drexel, and as we're later going to find out, yeah, they don't exactly get out much, but really? They didn't notice the robots at first? So, the guy's like, chuck the boy back to the fishes, then tear the machines apart so they don't cause trouble. Then Luke's like, now, wait a minute. I said, wait! As he activates the lightsaber and they kind of recognize him as a Jedi. Which, by the way, on the cover and within here, they're spelling saber S-A-B-E-R. I'm not sure if this is the first time that they've done it or not, because earlier they were spelling it S-A-B-R-E, and I was just noticing it so much, so maybe they've corrected it before then, but yeah, pretty cool. Jedi. Even in the moment of danger, Luke thrills to the word and wishes it was true. Wishes that, like his father, whose saber he wields, and like Obi-Wan Kenobi, the man who trained him, he too was a Jedi Knight. Ben Kenobi was the last of the proud line, and he barely started teaching me about the Force when he fell dueling Darth Vader, and yet sometimes I feel as if he were still with me. And Luke gets a little flashback, and it's not a full splash page like they've been doing. It's just a little, you know, one thought balloon flashback to Darth Vader and Obi-Wan dueling, both with red lightsabers. Well, thanks for the exposition, and at this point, it's almost obligatory that we do get the movie flashback once an issue. So Luke holds the men off with his lightsaber as much as he could, although they're on the little boat, and there's only a few of them, and Luke with the saber, he should be able to overpower them, but yet he's in danger of being overpowered, so R2 interjects. R2, you're leaking lubricant onto the death. Someone could. Yes, somebody could, and somebody does. They slip and fall. But R2 leaking lubricant, and oddly illustrated as well. There's just so many jokes that can be made about that, and I'm gonna let someone who's more clever make the jokes. So Luke successfully commandeers the vehicle and demands to be taken to the governor. Which is weird, because once Luke's taken to the governor, it's basically as a prisoner anyway, so... yeah, you basically, you know, they were gonna chuck him to the fishes, so at least he was able to assure his survival, but yeah, kind of weird. So we get the full splash page of, which is really, really awesome, and like I said before, in the 70s, splash pages were not very common, but StarWarsMarvel.com, my obligatory plug that I always do for the blog page, it's these big boats, which look like, they've been on there for a while, they're kind of rotting, some of them have these funguses growing on them. There's a trio of them, and there's a really, really big one in the middle. I haven't seen the movie Waterworld, but from things I remember from the commercials and things online, this looks like it might kind of be like that, or maybe I'm wrong. Well, the governor, who looks strangely like a Napoleon cartoon character, is ready to execute the men for the lost skimmers. They try to save face by showing them the robots, and the Jedi that they brought back with them. Found them with the robots, Your Honor! He swings a lightsaber, just like one of them Jedi Knights the histories tell us about. There's far more to being a Jedi than that, or so my father insisted. He likened them to warrior priest, or wizards. But of course, he hated and feared them too. I find this interesting because it's the in-universe perception that the galaxy had of Jedi at the time. And I always liked the way that the Expanded Universe kind of did the guessing on this stuff, because they didn't have Empire and Jedi, or even the prequel trilogies like we do now, to tell us this stuff, and how much of it they got right, and how much of it they didn't. But Luke convinces the governor that he can make sure that he gets his true worth of the droids, and he starts to think on his feet, you know, to ensure his survival, and it reminds him of Han. And as we've done in the previous issues, whenever a character thinks about another character, it cuts right back to them. Crimson Jack Star Destroyer, which I'm noticing now, and I don't know if it's been like this since the first issue, in issue 7 when it appeared, but it has 4 of those little shield generators on top. Huh. Han and Jack are getting closer to the Drexel system, and Han's trying to figure out what he's going to do when Jack gets to the planet and realizes that there's no rebel treasure there. Because apparently Leia didn't really think that part of the deception through, did she? So, the past time, Jack proceeds to tell Han the story about how he came into possession of the Star Destroyer. He basically salvaged it after what he calls the first Rebel victory, which, according to Wikipedia, is actually the Rebel victory that is spoken about in the A New Hope opening crawl. In fact, it calls it the Battle of Toporara. I hope I'm pronouncing this right. Indirect mention only. In this flashback, TIE Bombers, albeit getting blown up, but TIE Bombers all the same. Pre-Empire Strikes Back. This is something that's going to continue in the Marvel run. Apparently Lucasfilm showed them some stuff, is what I read in one of the interviews somewhere. But the Star Destroyer was badly damaged, Jack and his men were able to take it over and salvage it, and then we get an odd line of dial. Han says, "So, I get it. Why abandon her if she could be reclaimed instead? Jack, I never thought I'd see it. A pirate with a vision." But the cost, even for a man completely successful at a trade like you. I found backers, my boy, willing to come in for a share for future profits. I say that that's odd because, really, in fiction, when you're writing something, there's usually not supposed to be lines out of nowhere that mean nothing, and really, that line kind of has no purpose. Like, so how'd you do it? Oh, I had backers. Well, maybe I'm just reading too much into it, but that line does come back, because it's something that's going to pay off way down the line. way later, and I'm wondering, reading this, if it was Archie Goodwin's intention at the time. Spoiler alert, but the backer that Crimson Jack has is Jabba the Hutt. So yes, that is going to come back much later. Unfortunately, the crew members are interrupting this little bonding moment between Solo and Crimson Jack to inform them that Jolly has gone nuts and attacking the crew. Apparently, Leia has awakened some sexual feelings in Jolly, and no, I don't mean that, you know, Jolly wants to bang Leia, but all Leia's talk about kissing men basically made Jolly talk to some of the crew members, asking them about kissing, and they decided, hey, maybe she's in the mood. So they took things a little too far, and Jolly started blasting them, saying, just because a girl talks about kissing doesn't mean she's ready to do it! Whoops. So Jack kind of slaps her on the wrist. Enough, girl! What in the civilized systems do you think you're doing? Cooking a space ape just because a person talks about something doesn't mean she's ready to go at it. Anyways, it's that Princess Leia's fault. She's the one who set me thinking about, with all her blaster about... What about Jolly? Says Han. And then Jolly smacks Han in the face. About you and how well you kiss, you Carillion clown! First the princess lays into you, and now Jolly. What is this power you have over women, Mr. Solo? I don't know, but I hope I lose it soon. Han getting slapped again. Hilarious, although I'm unsure how to feel about the Jolly kissing mind games thing. It's like some weird Judy Blume novel or something. I'm not sure. Chewbacca, who they say is 100 years old here, but Wikipedia says that 200's the correct age, pulls the ship out of hyperspace to Drexel, and I did not notice this at first, but on the top panel, you can see on the side, there's a note that says, let me try and read, it's a little smudged. The water planet is one dark shadow, behind it is a sun, and suns glow. Yeah, that's what it says. It's a little note, I guess, for the inker from Infantino, I'm guessing the Terry Austin, that they forgot to edit out in the final production. I didn't notice that at first, but it was pointed out to me while listening to Marvel to Star Wars Monthly Monday from Two True Freaks, which is another great podcast, which is ahead of me in the Marvel Comics Star Wars thing. They do a great job on it. But unfortunately, maybe Jack read the editor's notes, or maybe Jack's looking at his scanners, but he recognizes that it's a water world, and that the Rebels couldn't possibly have a treasury there. Well, so, I'm waiting to hear about this, but not very long. Jack, everything's okay. Just get the princess up here, and I'll prove it to you. Or die trying. Thanks, Leia. What a position you put us in. My overall thoughts on this issue? Because yes, that would be the cliffhanger. This is some of the better elements I love from Archie Goodwin's newspaper strips, which I know haven't been published yet, but that's all I know about Archie Goodwin and Star Wars at this point. Infantino's awesome, and the full-page pirate ship was a comic book masterpiece. His faces and droids are still a little rough, like Han's face in the cliffhanger panel. Doesn't really look much like Harrison Ford. I'm liking this story, and really wish that they would have done more to get some of the other characters, like Leia, who's absent, involved. So, join us next time for Day of the Dragon Lords!